As you have pointed out in the coming famine, Julian, and I think so rightfully so, this could come home to roost. This can hit Australia, England, the United States with wars. It's a serious problem, and nobody's looking at it, are they?
Well, not really. I think we've taken our eye off the ball because, really, our farmers and our scientists have been so successful at raising food production in America, in Canada, in Australia, all around the world in the advanced economies, that we have become complacent about it and we have forgotten to renew the miracle, as it were, of food production. But right now, you know, bread prices in the supermarkets everywhere are going up because there's a drought in Russia, and rice prices in Asia and elsewhere have gone up because of the floods in Pakistan. So the world food setup is very closely interlinked now, and even a small blip somewhere immediately comes home to hit the consumer.
Now, your book, of course, is called The Coming Famine, which would scare the heck out of a lot of people. What do you mean by that?
Well, basically, I mean if we don't reinvest in agriculture and reinvest particularly in agricultural science and do a whole lot of other things as well, the world runs the risk of major famines starting in about 20, 30 years' time, but towards the middle part of the century when we've got to carry 10 billion human beings for a period of about 30 or 40 years until we can get our numbers down, the world is going to have to sustain and feed something like 10 billion human beings, and many of them eating at much higher levels than they ate in the past. You've got China, you've got India, you've got these countries where people's living standards are rising, their incomes are going up, and so they're able to buy more food, especially they want to buy meat and dairy and oil seeds and all the good things that we enjoy. So the demand for food is skyrocketing. It's going to more than double. But the things that we need to grow the food, the land, the water, the oil, the fertilizer, the technology, they're all winding down. They're getting more and more scarce, and there's deep reasons for that. And so, you know, if it was just a case of applying a bit more science, then we could probably do it. But it's not, because all of the basic things we need to grow food in the world are becoming very scarce now.
I probably won't see the famine. My kids probably will toward the tail end of their existence on this planet. Their children will definitely experience it, won't they?
Absolutely, but you never know. I mean, if there was a serious blip in the monsoon or something like that, we could see a famine next year. So these things are not, there's going to be no warning when it happens. And the other side of that is the gigantic cities we're building. We're building these enormous cities of 20, 30, and 40 million people. Now, a city like that very rarely has any internal food production. It relies on the trucks, a river of trucks coming every single day to deliver the food to that city. If there's a fuel shortage, if there's a small war and the trucks don't come, what happens to the inhabitants of that city? So those are the kinds of things that can spring up at without warning, really.
And we see, Julian, what happens when a hurricane hits a city or a tornado or some other calamity. We're not talking about a countrywide problem. We're not talking about a worldwide catastrophe. We're talking about just little cities and how government can't even cope with that kind of a problem.
Yeah, we saw what happened in Haiti and things like that. Yes, we're quite unprepared. And so the book is a warning to prepare in advance before these things start to happen, before it really starts to come down. Because, you know, agriculture, you can't just crank a handle and double your food supply. It doesn't happen like that. It takes 20 years of R&D and solid investment by farmers and planning by farmers and food companies and things like that. This is a long, long process. It takes practically a generation to move a piece of technology from a university somewhere out onto thousands of farms. So we need to start thinking about it now, basically.
Explain to our audience, Julian, what it's like for someone to truly be hungry. You know, I know, for example, if you go a certain amount of hours before you eat, you get weak and, you know, you get that pain in your stomach. Imagine not being able to have food at all because there's nothing out there. What happens to somebody?
Well, agony, basically. Agony for the individual. Perhaps what's even more important, though, is that if you get many, many people suffering, and the Spanish have this saying that there are only 7 meals between civilization and anarchy, if the people go unfed for about 2.5 days, they get very angry with their government. And government's role, that's the point where governments are torn down. I mean, if there's a fuel crisis, people get angry enough with the government, but if there's a food crisis, people rip down the government. And we saw that happen in the French Revolution. We saw it happen in the Russian Revolution and the Civil War. And both of those killed hundreds of thousands, in the case of the Russians, millions of people. We have seen it constantly as a background factor in most of the wars that have happened in the last 20 or 30 years. You look at Darfur, it started with an argument between farmers and cowboys, basically. It was a disagreement over grazing. In Rwanda, the same sort of thing. In the background, there was an argument between different ethnic groups over access to food, land, and water. So these things are right at people's heart. If they can't feed their children, they get very, very angry, and they want to take or secure their food from whoever it is that they think is threatening it. It could be another ethnic group or another political group or something like that. But they're prepared to kill. So these things are a constant source of instability. And, you know, if you go on the CIA World Book site, or you look at the defense writings from the British or the American defense establishments, they all acknowledge that famine is a major causative factor of wars. So the point is that if we don't have enough to eat, or if we have short-term famines arising around the world becomes a very unstable place. Our children are a bit taken into harm's way to try to be peacemakers and things like that. It's a dicey situation if we don't attend to this food thing.
Where are the problem points right now, the pressure points, Julian, around this planet of famine potentials? And it's going on in some spots.
Well, Africa is an obvious one because they didn't really enjoy the Green Revolution like other countries did. But, you know, if you look at the Indo-Gangetic Plains, that vast area of northern India, Central Asia, Western China that is watered from the Himalayas, as the glaciers in the Himalayas melt, the rivers which run year-round will become episodic rivers. They'll only run part of the year. And the farmers who used to grow two crops will only be able to grow one crop. And you've got 1.3 billion people there now and 2 billion people living there by the mid part of the century. Now, if their food supply is halved, you know, you've got a serious crisis on your hand. Let's look at the North China Plain, which is the food bowl of China. I mean, China is a very water-poor country. They have already used up the top aquifer. They use groundwater to grow their crops to a very large degree. And they've used up the top aquifer. They're halfway through the second aquifer. What are they going to do when the bottom one's empty? So, you know, these are big questions. Where are those Chinese going to go? What is China's response to that sort of thing? So these are problems not today, maybe not even in 10 years' time, but they're points of extreme vulnerability. And the thing we need to remember, let's think of the history of America and Australia and places like that. When the Irish famine was on in the 1850s, about 750,000 Irish died of hunger, but, you know, 2 million Irish packed their bags and left the country, and they went to America, and they went to Australia and Canada and other places. They just fled the country. That was a quarter of their population that fled the country. And the same sort of thing happened in Bangladesh in the 1970s. 10 million Bangladeshis packed their bags and went to live in India, caused a terrible ruckus at the time. So you see, you know, when people are hungry and they know there is somewhere else they can go to, they move. And that's the risk in this sort of thing. If we don't make plan for this, there will be these tidal movements of refugees going from one country to another. And that again is going to affect everybody, no matter how remote you think you are from the problem.